Liz on Biz is brought to you by the Women's Business League, the only networking organization where women come together to connect, support, and grow authentically. Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just getting started, WBL is the place where genuine networking brings real results for your business. Join me, I'm a member, and sign up for a virtual membership, or you can join one of their local chapters at womensbusinessleague.com. Want to be a lead magnet? It starts with using better words on your website. Hey, I'm Liz Teresa, and I'm here to tell you that improving your copy is the absolute easiest, quickest, and most cost-effective way to get more clients and cash rolling in. Go to freecopyvideo.com to download my free copywriting training. See you there. Hello, and welcome to the Liz on Biz podcast, where the guests are barely prepped and I'm barely ready. I'm your host, Liz Teresa, and I help you launch, build online businesses you love. This podcast is all about entrepreneurship, and I hope you like it. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Liz on Biz. Here with me today is Elise Bastien. Welcome to the show, Elise.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have you. And you are, tell me, I know what you do because, well, like I, you're here, right? But tell everybody a little bit about what you do.
Yes. So I'm a breathwork and trauma expert. Let's see, where do I start here? So I discovered breathwork in 2001 when I was 19 years old. And I started training to become a breathwork facilitator in my early 20s. And I did a ton of breathwork training and started teaching breathwork at a very young age. And then I also was a school counselor for over a decade. I have a master's degree in counseling psychology. I was a school counselor for a long time working with traumatized children. So I have really put together like my experience and talent as a healer and breathworker with my knowledge, experience, and talent working with childhood trauma. And I've created my own trauma healing methodology to pinpoint what I call your core wound, which is like the one thing from childhood wound or unmet need that comes up in your life now and blocks your growth in your life now. And I've created a very efficient, very simple process to address that and shift it so that you can create what you want in your life. And I've had my business for about 5 years now, and my process has helped hundreds of women and generated over 7 figures in revenue. And it just keeps, you know, getting better. And it's been amazing. So that's what I do.
So in what's real, I find everything interesting, but 2001 and you were already doing breath work is awesome because I didn't hear about breath work until like 2020.
Yeah, I know. Nobody heard about it. Like first of all, I was so young too. And I remember I was in college and I remember like my one friend would always be like, she does it, like trying to tell people what I do, like with breath work. And I would be like, no, just stop. Like, don't tell them, they're not going to get it. Like,
No one knew what it was. Yeah. But like now it's such a, I would say more prolifically important now, but I don't know if it's because like we waited until society got super stressed and needed it more. I don't know.
I mean, I think also people are just more open to things now than they were in the past. So I think that, you know, that's part of it too. I think, you know, as like, yoga got more popular and just all different alternative methods of healing got more popular, that did too. And then, you know, there's like people that, you know, like there's like all the like bro breathwork type things and all these people who are doing all of these different things, you know, now because it kind of blew up.
Bro breathwork, like bros?
Well, let's even like call it like.
You mean, like there's dudes that are like, hey, let's do some breathwork. Oh, I make them all sound like.
Kind of, actually. Or it's more like, okay, so.
Oh my God.
It's more like where it's like, how do I describe it? Like, you know, the type of people who would do like an ice bath. Not there's anything wrong with that.
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
They bastardized it.
I mean, in a way, because I mean, and I think that's why I have such conviction in what I do, because I do think that with a tool like breathwork, I think a lot of people are using it, but really don't understand the impact or the implications it can have specifically around trauma. Mm-hmm. And it has the power to bring up a lot of childhood trauma. But also, if you don't have the skill set or the awareness to be able to effectively and successfully walk somebody through that trauma, it can re-traumatize them or, you know, cause further complications. So that's why I've created what I've created, because I want, and I have a certification program, so I want to train as many people as possible in how to do breath work in, you know, an ethical way where you're able to really walk people through the trauma that comes up when you use a really powerful tool like breathwork. So, you know, and that's not to make anyone else wrong. I just think that it's a very powerful thing. And I think some people are just using it more as kind of forcing or trying to be like, breathe and, you know, feel your emotions. But that's not, like, to me, that kind of stuff just will dysregulate a lot of people and kind of throw them into more fight or flight rather than putting them into a state of safety where they can actually access the subconscious mind and the deeper suppressed emotions, because no one is really going to be able to do that unless they feel safe. So, you know, I look at it very differently than I think, you know, some of the stuff that's out there, but it's just because of my experience and understanding of like what it actually takes to create a permanent result for people.
That is so interesting, because I actually never thought, I mean, I never thought that, like, if you're right, it would be so unsafe to do a modality like that that can bring up all of that stuff, because you could inadvertently really hurt someone.
Yeah, and also, look, I think a lot
out there recklessly breathing. But, like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and largely, I think most people have good intentions. But I also think there's, like, a very specific skill set that goes along with being a good practitioner. And one of those things is being able to separate your stuff from the person that you're working with. And that takes not only a skill set, but also having done a lot of your own deep personal growth and trauma work. And, you know, I think some people are not at that point yet facilitating. So then what can happen is, you know, things people can project on each other, or stuff comes up and no one knows how to handle it or support the other person through it. So, you know, again, I think most people have good intentions. I just don't think they fully understand or have the skill set to help people through what could potentially come up with a tool like breathwork.
And you've probably worked alongside people, you know, to help them once the trauma does come up. Because you said, or I was looking at your website, some people will be like, they have traumas, and if you don't handle your thing, whatever it is, and I could be many traumas, I'm not really, you know, I'm not you. Mm-hmm. You're the trauma. Like, we could be walking around with all these traumas, and that basically they can inhibit our ability to follow through on perhaps the things that we really want.
Yes.
To follow through on. Like, I can tell you, I had some traumas, but and I actually could probably even name them. But how do you get over it?
So, yeah. And that's what I do with people is, so basically, like, yes, there are a lot of things that have happened in your life that you could probably pinpoint. And, you know, if I was working with you, I would have you tell me all of those things. But basically what I would do is distill down everything you're telling me into one thing, which is what I call your core wound, which is the thing that you continue to recreate across all areas of your life. So, you know, instead of it being like, okay, well, I have to work on my finances over here, and then my relationship over here, and then my business over here, I help you see how it's actually all the same thing. And it's all a matter of something that was unaddressed from childhood, whether it's an unmet need or an actual trauma or event that happened. And then I show you how to address that part of yourself that's still wounded and still has an unmet need as it comes up in each situation. So, for example, if you're talking about not being able to follow through with things, when you're in the moment of, I really want to do this, but I feel like instead I'm just going to like eat ice cream or whatever. Like in that moment, you would be able to address the inner child that is driving the bus at that moment and doesn't feel safe and is not wanting to follow through for whatever reason, because she's afraid, you know, it's not going to be good enough, or she's afraid she's going to be criticized or whatever it is. You would learn how to address that part of you in that moment so that you could come back into your power and then be able to follow through with whatever it is you need to follow through with.
Yeah. And there are like, I don't want to say popular, like we like them, but there are popular wounds, right? Like, are there trending? Mm-hmm. No, what's the word? common. Common is much nicer.
Common. Yeah. For sure. You know, and I think that like things always, there are things that you see across the board with people, but then they always will show up a little bit differently with everybody. So I always say like, everyone is the same, but everyone's so unique and different at the same time, because like we all have these commonalities, I would say, like across the board, but then the way they manifest or like the way we internalize them and how we relate to them is always a little bit different depending on the person.
Yeah, like, because there's inner child, I saw something about a mother wound, there's an abandonment, mm-hmm. there's more, yeah. But these are just some of the common ones. I'm not going to call them trending wounds. Like, what a tone deaf website would be like, I teach people about trauma and be like, trending traumas. So they could click. Trauma now trending. That would be the most insensitive and funny website. I love it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it is kind of true, but I think all of those, you know, I break things down like that for people, but at the same time, I think it's just a way to give you context and an ability to understand what you're experiencing. Because I think that's the hard part for so many people, is like they might know that they are coming up against something that they know is rooted in childhood, but they don't know how to fully like understand it and how it's blocking them and how to shift it. Yeah. So a lot of that stuff is just to give you context and an understanding to make sense of what you're feeling. So that's, you know, but ultimately we can distill it down usually to one thing, whether or not it's based on abandonment or your mother or your father or your birth or whatever it was. But those give you just an easy way to make sense of it.
So you said your birth. So people can be traumatized by their own birth? Or is that not a right way?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no. Yes. So what I mean by that is one of the things we look at when I work with people is what I call birth story. So that is the circumstances around your birth from conception until 3 months old. So with that, we'd be looking at like, what were the circumstances and conditions while you were developing in the womb, right? So, you know, what was your mother's emotional state? Was she going through trauma? Did she have a lot of anxiety? What was her relationship with your father like? What was going on in the world? Like what were the circumstances that you were developing in? Because that really will create an imprint for just how you see the world, what kind of place you think the world is, and just like how your system will be operating. And then also we look at the birth itself. So, you know, if it was a traumatic birth, if it was a C-section, if it whatever, there can be things that actually happen at your birth that impact your story as well. And when you think about birth, it really is like your first experience of the world, is your first time you took a breath. It's your first experience with like being here. So whatever that first experience is, it's going to impact you and it's going to create an imprint or kind of like a lens through which you see the world. So there's so many different factors, yeah, and it's different for everybody. And, you know, all of it is going to be in your subconscious mind, not going to be something that usually, I mean, you might know certain things, right? Like, for example, when I was developing in my mother's womb, my parents, they were both teachers in Philadelphia, and there was a huge teacher strike when my mom was pregnant with me. and my parents didn't have any money. So that was like a very impactful, like fear kind of scarcity situation that was happening while I was developing in the womb. So it's like things like that, that you kind of look at and are like, okay, well, how might that have impacted the way that I'm looking at the world, the way that I expect to feel when I'm starting new things, birthing new things, starting a new job, starting a new relationship, whatever it is. We kind of look at the parallels between like what was the feeling in that situation versus like how I might be recreating that now in a way that is limiting me or stopping me from, you know, doing what I want to do in the world or reaching my full potential or whatever it is.
It's so hard to be a mother, isn't it?
So hard. Yes, I am.
So
and it is, yeah. It is hard. Yeah.
Because you want to protect your, like, because I hear that and I'm like, then I think about when I was pregnant with my son and I'm like, oh, good thing it was a very expansive time because I was like, I have a lot of money. I'm going to buy a house.
Yeah.
Out of this shitty apartment. Like, great. I had a nice husband. I still have a nice husband, but I had a nice husband. But then the birth itself was hell because they induced, it was horrible. South Shore Hospital, who will never sponsor this show. They like, it'll never happen. So I can say that they were horrible. It's fine, but it was awful. Right. And then it was traumatic in the way that they induced me. I kept saying, stop sticking things up my lady area. Stop poking me with, giving me drugs. Just cut me in half and take him out. I begged to be sawed in half is what I say about myself.
My God.
I'm like, can you imagine? I go, I don't even care. Cause I go, you're hurting. I knew they were hurting him. Right. I was like, this isn't right. So I get him out. He's fine. He was fine. I passed out because I was exhausted and traumatized because I was like, I want to be asleep and I don't want to be here for this. Like, so I closed my eyes.
I'm sure.
It's stressful.
But,
like, I think about that. And then you think about how trauma leaves an impression, right? And then you're like, should I have been a better birther? But it's not like you gotta feel something, you know? Like,
exactly. Hard. And that's the thing I always say to moms, because that's usually the first thing that any mom will say to me when we start doing the work and we look at the mother wound and the birth story and we're like, oh my God, I'm fucking up my kids. Sorry.
No, it's so fine.
People will say that. And I'm always like, no, don't even worry about that, because we're not here to like stop our kids from feeling emotions or having the human experience, right? Like, they're here to have the human experience, and that includes all the whole spectrum of emotion. You know, it's our job as parents, in my view, is to like guide, support, be present, and make them feel seen and acknowledged in what their experience is. But it's not our job to prevent them from ever feeling upset or hurt or whatever. We can't really do that. And the thing that I always say to people is, like, as you do the work to reconcile your own trauma and the way that it's impacted you, that has an effect on them without even you needing to say anything or do anything, because mostly kids learn through modeling, not anything that we ever say to them, usually.
Oh God, that's so beautiful. I mean,
yeah, it's true.
Just comforted me.
I'm like, well, it's true. And like, oh no, it's so true. I mean, I've seen it over and over again. Like I said, I worked as a school counselor for over a decade. And what I would see over and over again is, you know, you'd have a kid who was having a lot of behavior issues, couldn't pay attention, wasn't doing his work. And, you know, then you would see like, okay, well, the mom is not there. She's on drugs. And then when the mom would get clean and come back and be in the kid's life, the kid would be doing his work. He'd be behaving well. He would be listening. So it was like, no one told him like, oh, you got to behave better or whatever. It was just simply that he now had a mother who was present. So that,
I mean, model to follow. I mean, you know, I think about, my son has this little boy that's in his class. The little boy is wicked intense. Like, if Think has every diet, you can have a lot of diagnoses nowadays, right? So it has a bunch of diagnoses. I think where you're oppositional, that one, where you're combative.
Yeah, oppositional, defiant.
His mother is so intense. Mm-hmm. Like, his mother opposes everything. She'll call me and she never would listen to this. Cause like, she only calls me when she needs something and if she needs advice. And I'll give her advice. And then she'll say no. And then she'll go on about how that'll never work for her because problems, right?
Right.
And I like said her name to somebody at the school once. Like I was like, oh, so-and-so really doesn't like you. Like, or something like that. Cause you know, I don't know if you can tell, I just kind of say things, which can be
different. Yeah.
And so like I said it and then they made this face like, oh, we know she doesn't like us. Like it was like knowing look. But then when you say, it's like kids are like these little mirrors, right? For how we show up, behave in the world. My son idolizes me. Like I love him so much. It's physically painful for me. Last night he came to hug me and he repeats things I say too. They're parents and their mirrors because he comes up to
me. Oh yes.
He goes, I love you so much. It hurts me.
Oh, how old is he?
He's six.
Oh yeah. No, they really are. I mean, I see it. I have a boy and a girl and they both will mirror back things in their own ways. And they really are like kid. What I always say about kids is kids are simply just responding to their environment. Yes. So if we ever want to change a behavior or reconcile something that's going on with a kid, we need to look at, well, what message are they sending us about the environment that they're in or how they're struggling with the environment they're in? Mm-hmm. And then when we do our own work to change how we are creating our own reality and creating our own environment, then the environment changes and then they change.
Brilliant.
So I always say, because I learned this over time being a school counselor, like there's not really, like, I don't actually really believe in kids needing to go to therapy, actually. And I know that's like a big statement to say. And I'm not saying it's not beneficial in some ways. I think it's nice to have someone that they can feel safe with or that can advocate for them or whatever. But when it comes to actually like changing through that process, I don't actually think that is what kids do. I think when the parents change, the kids change. So
yes.
Anytime someone asks me like, oh, well, what should I do about my kid? I'm always like, well, you have to do the work. And then when you do the work, your kid will change.
That is the most, I want everyone listening to just go, well, oh, maybe let's all do breath work. Let's just go. Oh, no, I'm just kidding. Your breath work is a lot more work. You still do the breath work side because you're also doing this trauma side. Or is breath work one of the modalities that you get to use?
Yeah. So breath work is part of it. So what I use breath work for with people is to help them access their subconscious mind, because a lot of, you know, when I talk about the core wound and the trauma from childhood, most of it is going to be subconscious. It's not going to be something that you're necessarily aware of, or you might be aware of parts of it, but you might not be fully aware of how you internalized it or how it impacted you. So the breath work is a really easy way to access the subconscious mind. And then it's also a really direct and effective way to process your emotions. And that's something that is huge here. And I think a lot of people want to conveniently skip over that part, but we can't create any sort of transformation without addressing, feeling, and processing your suppressed emotions. So the breath work is...
Well, processing emotions, what you just said.
Yeah.
It matters, right?
It's everything. It's everything. And I see people doing every single thing they can do to try to avoid that part. Like, whether it's like over intellectualizing everything or trying to fix everything, or it's like, well, let's just change my perspective on the situation, or let's just like, you know, go do ayahuasca or whatever. And I'm like, listen.
What is ayahuasca? Is that something
like
else?
Plant medicine. Like plant medicine. You know, those people who do plant medicine now, like all that shit, which is fine. It has its place. But at the same time, like nothing can replace feeling your feelings. And that's the thing that people avoid the most. And that's one of the things that I feel very strongly about helping people understand how to do like efficiently and effectively, because it can be overwhelming. And most of the time people avoid this type of work because they're afraid of feeling their feelings and facing them, you know?
Well, kids are so good at that because it comes so natural for them to just communicate. All behavior is communications. When you said, what message is the child sending with that behavior? I'm like, that's because I once interviewed a parent coach and I love that sentence. It's like, all behavior is communication. And I'm like, I feel like that applies to kids and grownups, right?
But then, for sure. Yeah.
The other thing I want to highlight is we are so afraid to feel. And then I interviewed somebody else. She's a client of mine too. And she says, there is no such thing as a negative emotion. Emotions are just emotions. Emotions are information, but they do have to be felt. And I had the biggest feeling, what was it? Maybe 2 weeks ago. And I'm not over it. I hadn't cried, Elise, except at commercials that are really nice. But like, I hadn't had like a great cry. You know what I mean? Where you're just like, so I cried for 2 hours. I think about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago because I had a miscommunication with a client. And someone on her team was being mean to me. And I said, can you just be nice? Like I said it. It's absurd that I'm a grown up. Right. And I'm saying, or can you be kind? Because I want. And then they rained down on me about how I didn't communicate that, you know, about something, right? And I was just like, and I was looking at it and I'm like, but this is a misunderstanding. And I just kept wanting to clear it up, but it was already misunderstood.
Right.
So then it's fun. So then when I got misunderstood, I just like, and I had cancer this past year. I'm better now. I'm remission, right? Before that, I lost my mom in 2023, November. Got cancer in February 2024 until March 2025, and I was done.
Wow.
And now I'm here, right? And then I had this big thing with probably the client I love more than anyone. And I love a lot of my life. Like, it's a huge client. It was a very big deal client, I guess. Not even like affection love, but like one of the biggest moments in my professional career, I would say, was getting this client. And to see a failure in their eyes, although this is how I interpreted it, it turns out they don't actually think I stink or anything. Like, I think that they it was just a miscommunication, but I interpreted it that way, you know. And then I cried for 2 hours, and as I'm crying, I text my friend Patty, and I was like, Patty, why won't it stop? Like, it's so uncomfortable, like, it to cry this long, like, and I just kept being so upset about it. And then she was like, You have to keep getting through it, and you just have to keep breathing, like keep feeling the feelings and keep crying. Just do it until it can't cry. And then I'm wondering, do you think, I know we just met, but like, is it possible that I was white knuckling through all of this stuff until I broke? Like, do we white knuckle? I mean, I cried when my mom died, but I didn't cry. This was a big crack.
Yes, I think we white knuckle, yes. But, you know, for this particular situation, what I would be interested in is, why was this so charged for you, right? Because you know, you're able to look at it objectively and be like, okay, I understand what happened, but why was it so charged? So to me, that would mean that it hit something much deeper, right?
And
well, obviously, I don't know your history, but but like, things you said that stood out to me are like, you felt misunderstood.
I did.
And you maybe didn't feel seen in your truth, and or you felt afraid of, you know, this like losing the connection with this person. Right.
Yeah.
So those are like the big things that I heard you say, and then I would just wonder how that relates to how you felt growing up.
I think I was so like, if we did take a walk on the wild side and looked at that, I think one of my biggest traumas that I still have trouble with is being accepted for sure. And it's because I had, there are places in my childhood where like, I was told I was ugly by my friends. And then I got new friends when I was 9. And it was because I had acne when I was 9, which is so unfair. I was very young. Too many hormones.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But anyway, so I got acne when I was 9, horrifically, nothing helped me. And so I started wearing makeup really young because I wanted to feel better about myself.
Yeah.
And I lost these friends. Then I went back and became their friend again in high school. But like, they just, it was like, it was, I was in the theater group, but then it became about acceptance again. Which friend is the best, right? She gets the lead. Who gets the, who gets the worst part? And then like, why did I, like, and if I did get the worst part, why did I get the worst part? And then sometimes I didn't get the part because I wasn't a senior, but like, it would still come off as a, you're not, you can't sit with us sort of feeling.
Yeah. So
it's a rejection. Yeah. I definitely have, and it's weird because I teach visibility, but like for somebody that teaches visibility, it's because I always craved having my voice matter, which is why the show is so important.
It's, yeah.
You know, like having the show. Because, and I didn't want to work in entertainment because I worked, I mean, I was going to work in, be an actor, like, and that was going to be my path. And I chose not to because I didn't like how we hurt people. Like I worked at a casting studio and how people would try so hard to get a commercial where you just say the word Parmesan or something. And all that, do you know what I mean? Like, and people would come in and it would be so serious. And like these, every model carried shoe bags, by the way, because it was so hard to walk in New York that you couldn't walk in your shoes, so you carried shoe bags and wore sneakers to your audition. So you'd wear the nice shoe at the audition and then change back. It was a very city thing that I learned. But, but I just remember the way that what's wrong with entertainment and Hollywood and media in general is that there is this, like, there is such elitism about who gets to matter. And I feel we all matter. Like, I really do. I think everyone in the world has a gift. That's why I love this show, because I get
to interview people. Yeah, I think that too. Yeah. No, I totally get that. I feel like it's definitely, like, for me, I did theater and stuff when I was younger too. And I always, like, when I was in second grade, that was my first play. I was Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. And from that time, I was like, I'm the star. Like, I'm meant to be the star. Like, I'm meant to be the lead behind the microphone talking in front of people. Like, I knew that, but I also knew I didn't want anything to do with like Hollywood or that type of thing, but I always knew I was going to be it in my own way. So I totally understand that. Cause I'm just like, that just must be such torture to go through all the time of like being told that you're not good enough or you're
it's horrible. I don't know how they do it. Like the people that do it over and over, I don't have it. Like I didn't want, I love acting. I was really good. Actually. I went to Stonehill. I minored in theater. I competed at the college for acting. I was excellent. However, I just didn't like the idea of entering into a profession where other people got to decide if I was worthy.
Yeah. And I think that's what is inherently wrong with it.
And I think
why it'll probably collapse at some point, because it is not sustainable in that way. And I think like, and I think we're even seeing it now because so many people are like, you know, what we do and we're creating our own platforms and being the star of our own show, you know, and like, I think more and more people are doing that and like divesting their energy from that kind of, you know, paradigm.
Well, yeah. I mean, I just saw an ad in People Magazine. Like, People Magazine is part of the problem, right? The fact that I have it was like a free magazine that came because they just send them sometimes. And I was like, at the back of the magazine, it was like, oh, come to this women's empowerment, And it was like we'll be featuring, and it was all podcasters. I don't know, but it was like all women's, podcasters. And I even thought about it today. I'm like, I was gonna say like, oh, not like anybody can have their own show. And I'm like, no, nowadays you can. You can literally just go on the internet and have a show. Like that.
Totally.
I did this just because I was like, oh, what if people listen? Maybe I'll just do it, and it worked.
Yeah. And so totally. No, it is. I mean, same with me. Like, I think just to like, just to go back to the childhood stuff for a minute, I want to tell you what I would say to that is actually what I would say is I would actually kind of like go back further than that, even to kind of how, what could we find that was rooted within your relationships with your parents and the general energy in your house growing up, even before that, that facilitated the way that you felt unaccepted and how that was so painful for you, right? So I would trace it back even further than that. And again, you don't have to know what that is at the moment, but that's what I would say to that. Because typically, like, anything that happened, like, at, like, school age, like, that stuff when you're, like, in school and the way you kind of, like, interpret those interpersonal relationships will already be set on a foundation of, like, what you did or didn't get in your relationships with your parents or what those dynamics were before you even enter into those relationships at school.
Wow. That is profoundly interesting how impressionable we really are. We're really molded by that beginning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're just sponges. And if you think about it just from, like, a, you know, like, cellular kind of perspective too, if you think about, like, okay, well, what are cells, right? Like, their energy, their consciousness. So when you're growing inside of your mother, you are literally being built from her cells, her consciousness, her energy. So it makes sense that you are going to take on things from her, like her consciousness, her psyche, the way that she looks at the world, what she's feeling, her patterns of behavior and energy, like, all of those things are, like, you're being built from that. And, like, yes, you have your own soul, your own consciousness, and your own, you know, purpose in the world. And you also are being built from her. So, you know, we always want to look at ways that you took things on from her, ways you identify with her or as her, and then how you become enmeshed in, you know, trying to figure out, like, what is the difference between her and you? Because for the beginning part of our lives, we don't even realize that we are separate from our moms, right? We were the same as her for a long time. So, you know, a lot of it too is part of the process of understanding, like, what is actually mine versus what is hers, and how did I take things on from that relationship? And then also just from, like, what you witnessed in your environment and how you absorbed energies and thoughts and feelings and beliefs from your environment, largely your parents or siblings or whoever was, like, closest to you from ages 0 to 7.
God, so, like, so your work must be really interesting.
I mean, like, I think it's really interesting.
It's wildly interesting. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's all data too. It's like, this is all really just science. I mean, like, of understand, it all makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I think it's just about looking at, for people, okay, well, what is the problem that you're having now? And then how can I trace that back to something that happened at that time? Because, you know, I always say to people, like, we're not just going to go digging around in the mud for no reason. We don't need to dig up every single thing that happened in your childhood. What I'm really looking at is, like, what is the issue you're dealing with now? And how can I help you resolve that through looking at where it originated, which is most likely sometime in early childhood?
Well, this has been, Elise, I want to just keep you forever because, like, I'm, like, wicked into this topic. But, like,
yeah, this is a fun conversation.
I know. I'm just, like, my brain is, like, blown. But, like, tell everybody how they can find you online. And, like, because you work, I mean, a lot of people that listen to the show are business owners. And I know that a lot of times we are these people that want to, you know, go to the next level or whatever that looks like for us.
Totally.
You work with a lot of people like us.
Yeah, I mean, most of my clients are business owners or aspiring business owners. So that's pretty much the population that I work with. So yes.
Well, tell everybody how they can find you online, because they absolutely should.
Okay, so you can find me on Instagram at Elise_breathes. And then my website, elisebreathes.com. I also have a podcast called Reclaiming Consciousness, where I share a lot of my teachings about trauma and different aspects of it. And then, you know, I'm on all the other places like Facebook, LinkedIn, all of that, just Elise Breathes or Elise Bethine.
Awesome. You guys, all the links will be in the show notes. Elise, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to subscribe, listen again later, tell your friends, leave a review, because all of that helps me do all of this. For show notes and more information, check out lizteresa.com/podcast.
Liz on Biz is brought to you by the Women's Business League, the only networking organization where women come together to connect, support, and grow authentically. Whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just getting started, WBL is the place where genuine networking brings real results for your business. Join me, I'm a member, and sign up for a virtual membership, or you can join one of their local chapters at womensbusinessleague.com.